For most of this century, there has been a single story about global food security, that food insecurity existed outside U.S. borders, in low and middle-income countries. And in these countries, food producers themselves were the most food insecure of anyone. This single story lent itself to a simple policy solution: increasing agricultural production in developing countries. It is still incredibly important to do this, but not only this. As demographics change, as geopolitics shift, as the world wrestles with the COVID pandemic, and as climate change causes temperature and weather extremes worldwide, today's food insecurity requires new solutions. Have policymakers kept up, or are they relying on yesterday's answers? Welcome to the Reset the Table podcast, where we'll make room at the table for fresh ideas for solving food insecurity around the world and right here at home. My guest today is Dr. Shelley McDermid Wadsworth, Distinguished Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Purdue University and Director of Purdue's Military Family Research Institute and Director of Purdue's Center for Families. Dr. McDermid Wadsworth has researched military families for over two decades and has published numerous articles and books, including on the challenges that active duty and veteran families face. In addition to her research, Dr. McDermid Wadsworth conducts field work related to food security among veterans in the Midwest. Shelley, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, Shelley, at the Center for Families and at the Military Family Research Institute at Purdue, the scope of your research is wide. It ranges from military families' psychological health around deployment, minimizing deployment-related stress and how this affects military families, deployment-related transitions and how they contribute to positive growth or dysfunction, unique challenges facing military families, and many other topics. So I'm wondering, how were you first exposed to food insecurity among active duty military families?
I first became introduced to the problem of food insecurity among military families early in the OIF-OEF conflict. We were working very closely with the Department of Defense at the time. We were conducting a lot of research for the Office of Military Community and Family Policy. And I think there were some stories in the newspaper about service members and their families on food stamps. And that provoked quite a bit of discussion inside the Pentagon. And I was able to hear some of those discussions and led me to try to think a little more about food insecurity.
Yeah. What about among veterans? When were you first exposed to that topic?
Veterans, we thought about later. Once we became more involved in engagement and outreach work, we did a lot of work with local communities to help them hold activities and events that would reach veterans living nearby. And what we realized, serving cities and towns fairly well, but we weren't reaching the low-resource veterans living in rural areas. And we know that housing insecurity can be high for those veterans, and food insecurity goes right along with that. We started looking into it a little more and discovered that, yes, it did indeed seem that food insecurity was high among some groups of rural veterans. And we wanted to try to see if we could come up with some ways to tackle that.
Through your work with families, generally speaking, at Purdue, what have you learned about how stressors like food insecurity can affect service members and their families?
Going through periods of stress and transition can experience the consequences of these challenges throughout the family system. And this is something that we say often about deployment. Deployment doesn't just happen to one person in a family. Similarly, just because one person loses their job, unemployment doesn't just happen to one person in a family. It happens to everyone in the family. Food insecurity obviously has a physical component where people's own health might be compromised, but food insecurity rarely occurs just by itself. The kinds of things that produce food insecurity themselves can contribute to families feeling stressed and challenged. Maybe there's financial insecurity that goes along with it. Maybe they live far away from a food supply, all those things. And so it can impact the way that family members interact with each other. It can impact parents' ability to be patient and understanding of their children. When children are stressed, it can manifest in lots of different ways, everything from tummy aches and disturbed to sleep to much more serious things. So food insecurity is part of a kind of stress system, if you will, that can produce a lot of consequences for families.
And among service members themselves, have you had a chance to look at that in specific, how food insecurity within a family might affect service members who are on duty?
Certainly, we want service members to be physically on top of their game at all times. They have very demanding jobs. They need to do everything they can to preserve their health and well-being. And we know that when people have kids, for example, they'll feed their kids before they feed themselves. And so when there is food insecurity in a family, it would be easy to imagine that a service member would deny themselves something in order for their children to be able to have food. A larger issue ties to work and family relationships, where if a service member feels that the food insecurity in their family is somehow their fault because of something related to their job or something that they did or failed to do, that can lead to feelings of shame or anxiety that in turn can impact mental health and interactions with both partners and children, as well as their interest in military service and their concentration on their jobs. There's not been a lot of research on those kinds of consequences, but it's not a big step to connect those sorts of outcomes to other kinds of stressors that produce similar outcomes.
I'd like to turn to focusing on food insecurity among veterans in specific. In May of this year, in May of 2021, USDA published an assessment of food security among working age veterans, who comprise 3/4 of all veterans across the country. Its authors found that after adjusting for observable differences between veterans and non-veterans, veterans had a 7.4% greater risk for food insecurity than their non-veteran counterparts. And also they found that food insecurity was higher among disabled veterans, unemployed veterans, and female veterans, and that it was higher among veterans living outside of metropolitan areas, which speaks to the work that you've been doing for some years now through the Reaching Rural Veterans program. So can you give us an introduction to that work?
Well, I mentioned earlier that we had been for a number of years doing work in communities, helping them to organize activities and events to support veterans living in the communities. But we recognized that that really wasn't reaching veterans out in rural areas. And we knew from other work that we had done, the housing insecurity could be high in those areas and food insecurity as well. And so because these sorts of problems rarely occur in isolation, you're rarely going to find someone with high food insecurity who otherwise has no difficulties. It can happen, but it typically doesn't happen. Typically, these things operate together. And so we started trying to think about ways that we could somehow reach veterans living in rural areas, hence the name of the program. And we decided that food pantries were a really great resource to use as a platform for delivery, that food pantries have something that veterans might want and need in the form of food. They're also community gathering places, and they're also aiming to be very inclusive and open. And they have a mission and a mandate to serve people with high food insecurity. And so we partnered with the Cooperative Extension Service, which is a well-kept secret that's not supposed to be secret. Educators in every county in the country. We started in Indiana and Kentucky and tried to work out a way that we could train food pantries about veterans in their area and their needs, help pantries attract veterans to the pantry, and then have waiting there for veterans when they got there other community resources so that in addition to addressing their food insecurity needs, they also could perhaps become more tightly connected to other kinds of community resources, as well as VA benefits and services.
Can you tell us what a typical day in this program looks like? What if we were to visit one of the sites, what would we see?
We begin by training pantries after we've recruited them to work with us. And, you know, they don't always want to work with us. It requires them to do some extra work. We are fortunate to be able to make small grants to pantries to make up for the work that we cause. We try to do rigorous evaluation, and so they do have some obligations. But once we've got them committed, then we work to train them. We hold training sessions to help them learn about the veteran community, veteran needs, veterans' issues, and how to think about establishing relationships with the veterans. And a lot of food pantry clients are maybe families with young children might be more common. They don't typically have special initiatives to reach out to veterans, so it's a community that they may not feel that they understand very well. And then we work with the pantry to organize every few weeks a resource fair where we intentionally engage organizations from the surrounding area to come and be available to veterans there. So if you were to come to a pantry on an event day, you would see display tables or other ways of, you know, making these resources available. We've had to be creative in a whole variety of ways during COVID. So it's looked different depending upon what month it is and what's going on with COVID in the local area. And hopefully what you'll see is a substantial number of veterans showing up and being in conversation and signing up for VA benefits. You might see the VA Mobile Vet Center there, so veterans can actually meet with a counselor. You might see the county veteran service officer there. You might see local cooperative extension educators delivering nutrition information. And then the rest of the time, the pantry operates as normal, but hopefully veterans will feel more comfortable going there. And so we run these events. Usually with these grants, they're for a year. So we'll offer an event with the pantry for a year. And some pantries continue on after and some don't.
Thank you. You painted a picture of a lot of activity happening at the pantries that you work with. Can you describe a typical person who might benefit from these services? You mentioned that there are some families with young children. Do they tend to be male, female, older, younger? Who are you seeing there?
I've been surprised, honestly, that there is a fairly high percentage of veterans who still do have children at home. I think my expectation when we started this was that they would be all older than that. But there is a substantial number that do have children still at home. And one of the things we found in our pilot, for example, was that there were a fair number of veterans who were eligible for free and reduced school lunch for their children, but they weren't using it. But most of them are Vietnam and Korea era. So most of them are older. You probably know from the literature that veterans living in rural areas do tend to be sicker, if you will, more likely to be disabled, and more likely to be underserved by the VA.
We mentioned earlier that you've done several evaluations of this work. Can you tell me about the main findings of these evaluations?
Sure. One thing we found is that food insecurity has been pretty substantial in the folks that we've had contact with. And not surprisingly, it comes along with other sorts of needs like housing insecurity or financial insecurity. So our conclusion has been that this does appear to be a fairly high need population. Now, of course, we were recruiting people to come to a food pantry. So people who didn't feel that they had a need for food, for example, might not come. I mean, we felt that we were reaching the population we intended to reach. Household incomes were quite low, although in some cases this might be because they're living on Social Security or pensions or disability payments. Nonetheless, it's not a generous amount of money. So these households are indeed low resource. In our early pilot, with a small number of veterans, we did documentation of dietary quality, and their diet quality was poor. So there's a lot of opportunity to improve quality, which is an issue with food pantries in general, to try to make sure that food pantries have available healthy food to offer, that they can get their clients to take the food and eat the food. We did show during the pilot that veterans' food insecurity improved over the course of the program, as did their connections to benefits and services. Essentially, what we were trying to do was extend the front door of the VA out into rural areas. That's how we think of it. And so we were encouraged by the results of the pilot and have worked to continue refining the program and our evaluation of it.
Okay. So it seems like both evaluations found that among participants in the Reaching Rural Veterans program, food security improved. Enrollment in federal and state level programs also increased. And then it seems like in the first evaluation that you found evidence that dietary quality or intake of nutritious foods also improved. Is that accurate?
Yeah, all of that information was collected through the pilot. We are very encouraged so far.
Yeah. This is in four states in the Midwest, in rural areas in these states. And I'm wondering what you think about the potential of scalability to other parts of the country, to other states in the country, but also to urban areas, to reach veterans in urban areas. What do you think about both of those?
So first, I should definitely acknowledge contributions by the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships in the VA, as well as partners at the U.S. Department of Agriculture who were involved in early discussions about this program. They really helped us to conceptualize it and were very supportive as we implemented. We definitely designed it to be something that we hope will become something that is scalable. It's not magic. there's nothing that we're doing that has never been done before or other people couldn't do. We're trying to capture all the lessons learned so that other people can do it more easily than we've done it. And of course, it has to be viable in places where they can't make small grants to pantries. So we have to think about that as well. And right now, it is fairly staff intensive in the sense that we try to provide pantries with a lot of staff support to do these resource fairs and that sort of thing. But in the long term, my vision is that this is the kind of thing that I think a lot of VA medical centers would want to be doing. They have chaplains, they have volunteer coordinators, they have outreach coordinators. I think this kind of activity is something that could be very accessible to them as a tool in their toolbox to try to reach the veterans in their state. We've heard many times over the years that people have organized events for veterans and veterans don't come, particularly low-resource veterans. And so if we have figured out a way to be able to engage with them, that seems quite promising. County veteran service officers as well sometimes will say, you know, I'm sitting in my office all the time and they never come. And food pantries maybe could be a place where they would go and you can meet them there. You don't have to, you know, wait for them to come to your office. So we have been working on building a manual for the program. It really is our goal that it can be scaled in some form.
When do you anticipate releasing the manual? That's exciting.
That's a really good question. It's still going to be a little while yet. I think we have to get through the evaluation of what we're doing now in Illinois, and the work to complete the manual is part of the Indiana implementation that's just about to begin. So I'm guessing it's going to be at least a year.
I think that we've mentioned previously that this is, to your knowledge, the only pilot of its kind across the country. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. It's not the only program for low-resource veterans, and I think there have been some attempts to do some work around food insecurity among veterans. For example, most of the VA medical centers now have food pantries within their walls. So your question about extending things to urban areas in some ways has already been addressed, in part anyway. But when we were looking for research to base our work on and to cite in our literature review when preparing peer-reviewed publications, we didn't come across anything that was similar to this.
Good. Well, we look forward to following progress on this and on similar programs. I want to turn to something that you mentioned earlier, which is how the food pantries adapted during COVID-19. Have you seen that challenges that affect people across the country during the pandemic have affected veterans differently than non-veterans?
We, of course, are focused on low-resource veterans. They are vulnerable. In general, being exposed to combat or other kinds of trauma increases the likelihood of later mental health problems, as well as a variety of physical consequences. People who have prior vulnerabilities and prior exposure to trauma are then additionally vulnerable to future stresses and traumas. And so there is some evidence from data that Blue Star families and others have gathered during the pandemic that some parts of the military and veteran population have been quite hard hit. And I expect that in the months to come, as more systematic data emerge, we'll see more of that.
As we start to wrap up this conversation, I want to turn back to your research that is, as I mentioned, very wide-ranging. And I want to turn to one thing that really doesn't have to do specifically with veteran families or military families, but it's about connecting university researchers with policymakers. And it's based on a study that you published back in 2019. Can you tell us, based on this study, in what ways do you think your research and research of others that you work with at Purdue and elsewhere can be useful to policymakers who are interested in improving food security among veterans and among military families generally?
We want policymakers to make good decisions, and we want policymakers to choose solutions to problems that are likely to be effective in addressing the problem at hand and hopefully minimize unintended negative consequences, which is always difficult. University researchers often produce knowledge that can help policymakers recognize that something is an issue, that it actually is something that merits their attention. It can also help them understand the issue more fully, that they may think the problem is really one thing, but in fact, it really might be a different thing. University researchers are in a position to try to help policymakers figure that out. University researchers also, of course, generate data about how well different policy approaches can work or have worked. That also should be of great interest to policymakers as they're trying to choose solutions for their state or their local area or for the country. So there's a lot. There are a lot of ways that university researchers can be very useful to policymakers, but there's a big gap between the two, and it can be a hard channel to cross.
Certainly. And I'm guessing that based on experience, I think that it takes outreach on both ends for policymakers to deliberately connect with researchers and then researchers be deliberate in their outreach as well. So for a policymaking audience, I'm wondering, based on your own experience, do you have advice about specific policies that might improve food security in the military community, so among veterans and among military families? And to add another layer to that question, you mentioned at the beginning that this problem does not happen in isolation. It's linked to so many other challenges that we have mentioned in the course of this conversation. So what do you think a well-intended policymaker would be smart to do?
I think we have to understand the circumstances under which food insecurity occurs. Over the years, there's been a lot of talk about service members and their families being on food stamps and how that's a bad thing, and we should not allow that. We should have policies that prevent that, and there have been various efforts within DoD to create substitutes for food stamps or improve the accessibility of food stamps to service members. It's a simplistic fix in a way because it doesn't address the issue of why is food insecurity occurring in the first place. My guess is there are several streams or several pathways to food insecurity. One of those pathways might involve underemployment among spouses. We know that's a problem. We know that earnings of spouses are well below their civilian counterparts. So I'd be interested in trying to understand if food insecurity is one outcome of that. We assign service members to live in particular places that might make it hard for them to access certain kinds of food. I'd be wondering, is that a path to food insecurity? Is there a path through compensation? Is military compensation just too low for certain kinds of service members and food insecurity is the result? Or is food insecurity occurring among people who otherwise we might think should have adequate resources but somehow are ending up food insecure? I'm sure that there are people in all those groups, but the policy solutions will have to be tailored for the pathway to food insecurity. And one solution might fit one group, but not another. I certainly, though, don't think that food insecurity is the only piece of this puzzle.
Thank you for that comprehensive answer. Is there anything you'd like to share that I didn't ask you about, or anything you'd like to add to an answer that you gave already?
I think what I would add, because you have an audience of people interested in policymaking, I think there are many researchers who are very interested in doing work that will be useful to policymakers. But it's also true that policymakers and researchers live in different cultures that communicate in different ways, that have different standards of knowledge, and they don't always speak each other's language very well. Nonetheless, they can have, I think, mutually productive relationships. And I just want to encourage both my research colleagues and my policymaking colleagues to be willing to exert a little bit of effort to learn to speak to each other across their cultural divide so that we can work together to produce the best possible decisions for vulnerable people in our country.
Coming from a policy background myself, I think that the way that you characterize the two different cultures is very accurate. And wondering too, before we wrap up, we mentioned a number of articles and book chapters and books, et cetera, that you'd published. Is there anything you can preview for us? Anything that's on the horizon for you related to military families and or food insecurity?
Well, we certainly will be looking to publish evaluations of our Reaching Rural Veterans implementations. We're very excited to be launching a new implementation in Indiana where we're actually going to be able to use a quasi-experimental design to compare pantries that we're working with directly and pantries where we're not holding events to see what the veteran traffic at the pantries is like and how the veterans in each area are doing. One big thing that's on the horizon is that we are about to launch data collection of a large study of young people who are adolescents today, but who were exposed early in their lives to a lengthy parental deployment. So we're kind of checking in on how the OIF-OEF generation of kids is doing. We call that Operation ME, where ME stands for military experience. So we're excited about that and eager to see what we can learn from that. We're also trying to work on a paper that really tries to grapple with the question of what does successful reintegration following a return from deployment mean? What does that look like? And what are the pathways through which people get there? That's been a kind of evolving project, but I'm hoping that it will see the light of day sometime soon.
Well, best of luck with those projects. Shelley McDermid-Wadsworth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
This episode was made possible with generous support from the Bob Woodruff Foundation.
That's it for today's episode of Reset the Table. You can subscribe on Apple or Spotify and follow us on Twitter @CSIS Food. Until next time.